This is the final verse again, yes? Yes, the final verse of the prayers offered by the personified Vedas. And then I'll go right into the translation, and then we'll continue with the purport. Dyupataya evate nayayor antam antatataya. Mapiyad antaranda nitaya nanu savaranaha. Kaiva rajam si vanti vyasa sayat shrutayas. Kaihi phalanti yatan rasan nena bhavan nidhana. The personified Vedas were very learned to be able to compose that Sanskrit in perfect meter. And we sometimes have our difficulty in making it sound poetic. Here is the translation of this final prayer, which summarizes, as the purport explained, it summarizes the conclusion that they've reached when praying to the Lord, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayana. Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach the end of your glories. So that point is the point we'll begin reading at. We spoke about that yesterday. What was the point? Just seeing if anyone was listening. Huh?
That he and somebody else can't understand his glory.
No one can understand, including the Lord himself, which is quite amazing, if one thinks about it, and we hope that everyone will indeed think about it, that his glories are unlimited and no one can know those glories fully. And even he himself cannot understand his full, complete, glorious nature. So the question will be raised, naturally so, is this a limitation that he can't even understand his own glories? Does that mean there is something that he doesn't understand? And if there's something he doesn't understand, then how can we say he's all-knowing? So that's the question that's going to be raised. And if he's not all-knowing, that means there are some things he doesn't know. And if there's some things he doesn't know, how is he the absolute truth? Something that's outside of his understanding. So the devilish mind and materialistic intelligence will try to work out some way that they don't have to surrender, basically. So that question's going to be answered. But here, this first point, you are unlimited, and we should try to understand what unlimited means. There is no limit to it, to the number of qualities that Krishna has, to his glories, there's no limit. And each of those qualities he possesses to an unlimited degree. And indeed, Bhagavan, avan as a suffix, means that he who possesses, and what does bhaga mean? It means fortune. So Krishna possesses all fortune. He is the one who possesses all fortune, not a partial amount of fortune, but the entirety and unlimited amount of fortune. And what are the elements that make one fortunate. So according to Parasara Muni, they are what? He is Sat Aishwarya Puna, which means that he possesses all wealth, unlimited wealth. That means not only the wealth of this world, or of this universe, or of all the universes, but he, because that would be a limit to the wealth he has, even if he possessed all the wealth in this universe or all the universes, but he has unlimited wealth. It's unending. In other words, you could take all wealth from him and he would still have unlimited wealth. What do you think of that, Murali Dhar Prabhu? Yes. Kamva dayalam saranam brajema. And think of it in terms of beauty also. If you took all beauty from him, he would still have unlimited beauty. Unlimited, unending beauty. How beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? It is extremely beautiful. Plus something. There is no end. It's ever fresh. This is Krishna. Because no matter how beautiful someone is, if we see them every day, we will get tired of it. But Krishna has unlimited features and aspects of his beauty that no one, and he displays them, and his intelligence, and his power, and his lila, his pastimes, he displays these in such a way that everyone who contacts him becomes fully charmed, and not for a short time, but because he has unlimited aspects to his beauty, his wealth, his fame, and what else? Strength, and his renunciation, and one more, and knowledge. Unlimited aspects. In a macro sense, he knows everything, and he knows everything in a micro sense, in depth, to its very core. Each have unlimited aspects. And put this together, and he's the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything in a form. And this is the conclusion of these prayers, that despite the fact, or including the fact, that he's unlimited, he's still a person with form and characteristics. But his form and characteristics are all unlimited as well. So this is Achintya Shakti. Sat Aishwarya Purna, but Achintya Shakti. He has all opulences, but it is inconceivable from our finite position. So because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven, that means the demigods, who have more subtle, finer intelligence, who are more knowledgeable, more powerful, they cannot reach his glories, the end of his glories. No, even you yourself can understand fully your potencies. Or for that matter, his bliss, his happiness. It is unending. He is composed of bliss. And if we can touch that, then that which we are longing for will be fulfilled, that we are longing for by turning our back on him. Krishna bhule se jeev anadiya bahiru. And what is the result of that? Rather than becoming happy, the result of false ego and living, making the attempt, the illusory attempt to live independent of him, is atta eva maya tari samsarera duk. What does atta eva mean? Yeah, therefore, for that reason. also in Bengali, yes, but therefore, because we turn our back on Krishna, rather than getting the happiness we want, we lose in our consciousness. We can never actually, in fact, be separated from Him. It is impossible because He is the all-inclusive absolute truth. We are His energy. We are with Him always. We cannot avoid Him, even if we want to. The closest anyone can get to avoid Krishna consciousness, in one sense, is Mayavad. Losing one's individuality, losing one's... And why the Mayavadis are such offenders is because they even acknowledge that there is a supreme, but instead of surrendering to Him, anything but surrender, even becoming Him, I'll even lose my individuality. I'd rather lose my individuality, my whole sense of individual, of that I exist as a person. I'd rather lose that than turn to Him in surrender and devotion and love. That's heavy, isn't it? That's why Mahaprabhu said, don't become a Mayavadi, don't become an impersonalist, and don't even hear from them, because they are aparadis, offenders. So much enmity with Krishna, so much avoidance of giving themselves to Krishna, that they would rather lose themselves, commit spiritual suicide, and lose their sense of self and give themselves to Krishna, who is all attractive. So that is springing from the enmity in the heart of the deepest order. Enmity with Krishna. Krishna bhule seji. And then atta eva. And therefore, what is the result of this turning back on Krishna? It is not the happiness. For it is rather samsareda duk, the miseries of repeated birth and death and repeated birth and death. So He is so glorious. Do we actually believe that we could talk about Krishna and glorify Him and never reach the end of His glories? Oh, you can ask that question to yourself. Next sentence. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. So universes, countless universes, are insignificant as dust appears insignificant within the air, unnoticeable, practically speaking. The example is given. Dust is unnoticed. We don't even see it, although it is there. We don't see the dust in the air, except every once in a while the sunlight shines upon it in such a way that we see the reflection of the sunlight in the dust. But otherwise, we don't even see it. So the universes are floating in Krishna. How powerful He is. And yet, they're outside of Him and inside of Him simultaneously. We brought up this point simultaneously yesterday. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme. Does anyone remember the Sanskrit term for definition by negation? Yes, that means not this, not this. But definition specifically. By negation, this is not white, this is not black, this is not, what isn't it? Papadam, still the same. It is blue tack, for some reason. Vyatirek. Haribol. You're going to school now?
Yes.
What will you study?
Hmm?
What will you study?
Math.
Will you learn something that will be useful in your service? Good Brahmin boy. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme. This is also the methodology that is in Sankhya philosophy of Kapila Muni, where he enumerates in what chapter of the third canto? Fundamental principles of material existence? 26. Well, Sankhya means counting. So he's counting the different elements, describing the different elements which comprise the totality of material existence, for the point of showing that the Lord, the Super Soul, and that the soul are not of this world. Same point of separating, of discrimination. Discriminating between what is the soul and what is matter. So the same process in Sankhya. So this is not the soul. This is not the soul. Earth isn't the soul. Fire isn't the soul. Ether isn't the soul. Air isn't the soul. Water isn't the soul. Mind isn't the soul. False ego isn't the soul. So this is the process, and intelligence, buddhi, and that's also not the soul. This is the process of yatareko and neti neti. So they become successful seeing that Krishna is actually, and the soul has nothing to do with this material world. And it doesn't go through the different changes that the material world goes through. It's Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, it is eternal, the soul is eternal. And what we're trying to do, or the ultimate part of this discriminating methodology, is to differentiate the soul's activities within the realm of temporary matter, which is what we see continuously. Differentiate that from the soul's activities in eternity. And Srila Prabhupada has defined Chaitanya Charitamrita, Charita, the activities of the soul, the Chaitana, in the realm of eternity. I find that concept so interesting. We're aware, very aware, of the activities of the soul entrapped in matter in the temporary world. But what are the activities of the soul when he is free from matter and in the realm of eternity? There's different levels of activities he can participate in. One is the level of sayujya, when he's participating in non-activities, sayujya liberation, when he just merges, loses his sense of self. And then there's the activities of the Lord in Vaikuntha, and then there are the activities, of the soul in Vaikuntha, and then which are also another eternal realm. And then there's the activities of the soul, the possibility of the activities of the soul in Goloka Vrindavan. So what determines the realm that the soul, the eternal soul, performs his activities in? His consciousness. So therefore, Krishna, bhavato mati, that we want to develop we want to develop our Krishna consciousness instead of a consciousness that we turn our back on Krishna and imagine ourselves the enjoyers of matter, which is incompatible with who we are. We want to develop Krishna consciousness. Anya vilasita sunyam jnana kama anavrita anukulena Krishna anushivanam. A consciousness of serving Krishna for his pleasure, a loving consciousness, a pure consciousness. And this is the Abhideya Tattva. This is the practice, the process, performing pure devotional service that will bring us to the highest platform of Prema Bhakti. Not mixed devotional service. That's not the Abhideya Tattva. It is pure devotional service. Jnana, karma, anavrita. Anya abhilasita sunyam. Other desires other than pleasing Krishna become sunya, including the desires of karma and jnana. So there's a very, very thin path, a fine path, pure devotional service. That is what we are moving towards, or in some cases performing. So please repeat. Because you are unlimited,
neither
the lords of heaven,
nor even you yourself,
can ever reach the end of your glories.
The countless universes,
each enveloped in its shell,
are compelled by the wheel of time
to wander within you,
like particles of dust
blowing about in the sky.
The Shrutis,
following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme,
become successful
by revealing you as their final conclusion. So what is the success of the Shrutis or the Vedic Upanishadic? What is it?
Revealing Krishna.
The person, huh?
As the final destination.
As the conclusion. That the conclusion, Vedas Prasavar, aham, I, Krishna says, am to be known by the Vedas. Me. He's pointing to himself. I am to be known by the Vedas. And there's certain, as the purports have said, there are certain specific Vedic texts, such as the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, that directly point to Krishna. And everything else is on the way to Krishna. Purification of the consciousness, removing what is not Krishna, what is not us. Okay, we'll read the purport again, and then I'll read it, try my best to not say anything until we get to that question that we were discussing yesterday and pointed to this morning. Here's the purport. Now in their last prayer, the personified Vedas draw the conclusion that all Shrutis, by their various literal and metaphorical references, ultimately describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead's identity, personal qualities, and power. The Upanishads glorify him without end. Yadod vagargi divayad arvak prithivyayad antiradvaya prithivi ime yad bhutam bhavatscha bhavisyatscha. My dear daughter of Garga, his greatness encompasses everything above us in heaven, everything below the surface of the earth, everything in between heaven and earth, and everything that has ever existed, exists now, or will ever exist. That's from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. To illuminate the meaning of this final prayer by the Shrutis, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur presents the following conversation between Lord Narayan and the personified Vedas. The Vedas say, Lord Brahma and the other rulers of the heavenly planets have not yet reached the end of your glories. What can we do we Vedas do, we Upanishads do, since we are insignificant in comparison to these great demigods. Lord Narayan replied, no, you are not insignificant compared to them. You Shrutis are gifted with more sublime vision than the demigods who rule this universe. And we spoke about this yesterday. What is the cause of our vision? Consciousness. So sublime vision means sublime consciousness. Your consciousness is more purified than the demigods who are Sakam devotees with desires. So you will be able to. So this is a dialogue. So the demigods can't reach it, but you'll be able to reach the end because you have more sublime consciousness. You will be able to reach the end of my glories if you do not stop now. But even you cannot find your own limit. What to speak of us having the ability to reach the end of your glories? You yourself, who are unlimited, cannot reach the end of your glories. And then the next point. If that is the case, what do you mean when you call me omniscient, all-knowing, and omnipotent, all-powerful? If I can't read it, then how do I know everything? So that's the question. Is that a fault of Krishna's, or the Supreme Lord, or a limitation of him if he cannot know his own glories? That's the question that's going to be addressed. So they say, we conclude, this is their answer to that you possess these features from the very fact that you are limitless. Certainly, if one is ignorant of something that does not even exist, like a rabbit's horn, that does not detract from his omniscience. And if one fails to find such a non-entity, that does not limit his omnipotence. Who can explain that in their own words? I'll read it one more time. This is the answer they're giving, and this is very much nyaya, or logic. Question is, if I don't know the end of my own glories, does that mean that I don't know everything, basically? Clever, yes. And they say, we conclude that you possess these features, or the unlimitedness, from the very fact that you are limitless. Certainly, and here's the point of logic, if one is ignorant of something that does not even exist, like a rabbit's horn, that does not detract from his omniscience. If you're not aware of something that doesn't exist, that doesn't mean you don't know everything. And what is the thing that doesn't exist that he's referring to? No, that's an example, but what? He's not aware of the end of his glories because it doesn't exist. And that doesn't detract or remove the fact that he knows everything, because the logical point is that if you can the awareness of something that exists points to its existence. Awareness of something points to its existence. So you can have a non-awareness of something that does not exist, and therefore that doesn't limit what you could still be aware of everything, but not be aware of something that has no existence. It's a point of logic. And secondarily, because the other point was one of omnipotence, of all-powerfulness. So if you cannot find the limit of your glories, that means you don't know everything, and also you're limited in power, too. So now the point is he's addressing the point of omnipotence. If one fails to find, so there's to know and to find. To know is a product of the intelligence, all knowingness, and to be able to find something is potency. Someone could know but not have the potency to find. So many times we know what to do, but we don't have the potency to do it. I know how I should chant my japa, but they don't have the potency to control this rascal mind. And then I go to someone and say, what can I do? I can't concentrate when I chant my japa. And so then they will tell you what to do. You just listen. But one that doesn't have the potency, the power to control this rascal, wild, chanchal mind, always flickering, always moving. So then what do you do if you know what to do and don't have the power? Yes, that's the solution. And also you keep trying until your power increases. And never, 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 never give up. And understand our limited power, our limited ability, and learn how to take shelter. And then if we learn that, we are very fortunate. We are very fortunate. And if we take shelter of something that's someone who's unlimited, like Krishna, the holy names, begging the holy names to be merciful to us, then despite the fact that we are limited, our abilities become unlimited by the mercy of the unlimited. Which is really the situation in the spiritual world. And that's what Krishna wants to give to us, because as tiny souls, tiny, insignificant, 1/10,000, our ability to enjoy is also tiny and insignificant. And when we connect with Krishna, our ability to enjoy becomes unlimited, because his ability to enjoy is unlimited. And that's what Krishna wants us to do. To again connect. That's called Saranagati. That is the process of again connecting to our relationship with Krishna. And this is the frustration of a soul, a conditioned soul in the material world, because we have consciously disconnected ourselves from Krishna, consciously from our consciousness. We're not Krishna conscious, we're selfish conscious, self-centered, living in an imaginary universe that I am the center. And indeed it is imaginary, because I'm not the center of this universe. Just ask anyone else. So we have to live in an illusory universe. You came so late today. Were you very busy this morning? Oh, I thought so. Had some appointments, early morning appointments. What time do you have to be in school? 9. So you don't have much time. So you better go see the deities, I would suggest. So we want to connect our consciousness to Krishna. How often? Continuously. In what mood? Not continuously, like Kamsa was continuously thinking of Krishna, but anukulena Krishna nashila, continuously in a favorable, loving mood. So what the Bhagavatam is teaching us and is just revealed to us, practically speaking, is that whole spiritual world, the process of attaining the spiritual world and the whole spiritual world itself, so that we can fill our mind with Krishna, our consciousness and desires to serve him. For how long? Continuously, because he's unlimited in his qualities, in his pastimes, in his form, his name, unlimited. And therefore great devotees like Thakur Haridas, like the Goswamis, they could chant Krishna's names from morning to night, and then from night to morning, and not get bored and not get tired, because Krishna is revealing more and more of his unlimited self, and the soul is bathing in that Krishna consciousness and feeling the bliss and satisfaction and tears coming from their eyes. causing these souls to give up everything in the material world, all external sources of happiness. They were all such prominent persons. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, there was the king of Gaudadesha, his prime minister and treasurer. And they gave it up. Tuchavad is insignificant. To what? To become mendicants, beggars, wanderers, homeless. No fixed income, no fixed food. They gave it all up as insignificant because they were tasting something on a different level continuously, ever fresh ecstasy, limitless, ever fresh ecstasy, as opposed to stale, trying to squeeze pleasure where it isn't for the soul who's turned his back on Krishna. And like Thakur Haridas, just chanting 24 hours a day basically, and not again just tasting Krishna, the flavor of his relationship with Krishna, Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati. That's Krishna consciousness, relishing the mellow flavor of our relationship with Krishna, Krishna bhakti ras. So how to taste that? And what would we be willing to trade for that? That's a more personal type of question. And you can't artificially, because we've seen, you know, we see the fresh enthusiasm of youth. We go, boom, I'll trade everything. And then a few years later, boom, I'll take back everything I just traded. I want to do it. We don't want to be like that. Prabhupada wanted everyone to be steadily fixed in the position that's appropriate for them. But yet we should know what the goal is. We should know what the goal is, and we should move towards that goal and not do things that are opposed to our moving towards that goal. And we should know what the difference is between what is good for our achieving the goal and not good. That's actually one of the anartas that Srila Bhaktivinoda points out from quoting the Amnaya Sutra. That in tattva vibhrama, not knowing the tattva, the philosophy, not knowing the difference between what is to be done and what is not to be done. So let's continue here. You are so vast that multitudes of universes float within you. Each of these universes is surrounded by seven shells composed of the material elements, and each of these concentric shells is 10 times larger than the one within it. 4 billion miles, and then countless, practically miles, and it's huge. Although we can never fully describe the truth about you, we perfect our existence by declaring that you are the true topic of the Vedas. Vedas chasavara. That the Vedas are meant to describe you, and they are only talking about you, but on different levels. Just like if the goal of mathematics is to bring us to some symbolic calculus, for example, then 1 and 1 is 2 is talking really, because it's pointing towards that goal. It's also talking about symbolic calculus in that frame of reference, in that mood. It's bringing one to that. And therefore, when one understands the Bhagavatam, even to some degree, one understands the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one can understand that the purpose of every part of the Bhagavatam is to bring us to perfect our consciousness and bring us to the spiritual world. But why do you seem dissatisfied? The question is asked. Because in the Vedas, Srila Vyasadeva has described the transcendental existence of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan only briefly. When he saw the need to elaborate on this description of the Supreme, he chose to concentrate on the subject of Brahman, the impersonal aspect of the Supreme known as Tat, that, explaining Brahman by negating whatever is different from it, just as in a field where a chest of jewels has been accidentally spilled, the jewels can be recovered by removing unwanted stones, twigs, and refuse, so that within the visible realm of Maya and her creation, the absolute truth can be found by the process of elimination. Since we Vedas cannot possibly enumerate every material category, every individual entity, quality, and notion, motion in the universe from the beginning to the end of time, and since the truth concerning Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan would still remain untouched, even if we described all these things and then discarded them, by this means of investigation, we never expect to reach a final definition of you. How many times do you have to say, when I'm defining this in the negative way, this is not a green dhoti, this is not a purple dhoti, this is not a purple papadam, this is not a purple kiwi fruit, this is not a red Udav, I need some help. Huh? It is not a red airplane, it's not a yellow airplane, it's not a purple airplane, it is not a soft purple airplane, it's not a hard purple soft airplane that's made out of papadums, and it's not this. So you can see that before you actually reach to say, finally, this is a white dhoti, it will take you a very long time. So that's what the Vedas are complaining about, the personified Vedas about, that the Vedas spend so much time saying what is not. We never really will get to the actual point, practically speaking, which is the sweet point of describing Krishna personally in his activities. And this is the cause of Vedavyasa's, Krishna Dwapayana Vyasa's, Vedavyasa's dissatisfaction, even though he has written, compiled the entirety of the Vedic literatures. What chapters of the Bhagavatam and canto is this described in? First canto? Chapters? Excuse me? Four. Four and five and six and the first part of seven. This is that pastime is described. Because the real happiness for a soul, and it comes from actually directly describing Krishna. That's the complaint. And that's really what goes on in Vrindavan all the time. And this is what goes on when the great devotees sit together. They talk about Krishna and experience Krishna, because Krishna is not different from Krishna Katha. And Krishna is actually in that. Puranarko dano ditaha. That Krishna is the Bhagavatam, the sun that has arisen in the darkness of Kali Yuga to give us light. Krishna is his holy name. Krishna is his holy land, Sri Dhammayapur, Sri Vrindavan Dham. He is these things, not different. He is these wonderful forms. He's come in these wonderful forms. He is there. But because we have so many things to do, like the Vedas, I have such a long to-do list that keeps every time I cross something or two things off and I feel good about myself that I've done that, so many things get added to the time of my life. To the end of my life, I'll neglect that which is the essence of life. And this is dangerous. And therefore Narottama Das Thakur says, Janiya Shunya. What's the rest? Bisha Kainu. even after having heard and knowing I drink poison, Radha Krishna Nambajiya, I don't worship Sisi Radha Balava. So who is more unfortunate? I've heard and I know, and still I don't do it. Since we Vedas cannot possibly enumerate every material category, individual entity, quality and notion and motion in the universe from the beginning to the end of time, and since the truth concerning Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan would still remain in touch even if we described all these things and then discarded them, by this means of investigation we never expect to reach a final definition of you. Only by your mercy can we make some attempt to approach you, the supreme, inaccessible, absolute truth, only by your mercy. And that's the conclusion. It's not the conclusion of the purport. No, there's still another page left. But that's the conclusion that we will stop in today. That only by Krishna's mercy will the Vedas, and that's what they're saying, will get to you, approach you, and only by Krishna's mercy will we also be able to approach him. So how to get the mercy of Krishna? That is the meditation of a devotee. Srila Prabhupada used to say, quoting his Guru Maharaj Srila Bhakti Sanatana Saraswati Thakur, don't try to see Krishna. Try to act in such a way that Krishna will see you. How to act in such a way that Krishna will see us. Take note. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Just for a few minutes and then we'll continue tomorrow for this, and we'll, Krishna willing, we'll finish this. Yes.
You were talking about the difference between the Italian intelligence and potency.
The difference between?
Like having the intelligence.
The knowing.
Knowing the same.
The knowing and having. Yeah, that was a discrimination that was made there.
And having the potency to put that into action. And the other day you were talking about the experiencing the gap from. Like being on a very low platform of Krishna consciousness and kind of being aware that we should be feeling this gap and putting that into our understanding and feeling this desperation to kind of make this bridge.
But not only desperation, but having, otherwise we'll just get depressed and unhappy. But what is it that makes, that brings the what is that brings the satisfaction for a devotee? Because if you just have those two points, you're not going, it won't be very pleasant. It'll be the International Society for Continued Misery. it's an actual but hope based on what?
Based on, well, Krishna has promises and we also might have some understanding of.
We have to trust Krishna that he will make up this and feel that we are in his hands despite everything. Despite our lack of qualification, that he's written our name in his book, so to speak. So I'm just going to do my part, my service, and just await his mercy, his kindness. But knowing, the security and faith that of knowing I'm in his hands. If we don't have that, just seeing the gap and seeing our faults, it just drives us crazy, basically. Makes us unhappy and miserable, and that doesn't help. That's not Krishna consciousness. There's a difference between, and that isn't humility either. To being aware and dwelling on all my faults is not humility. That's just neurotic behavior. Humility is touching my limitedness, and then quickly turning to Krishna and surrendering in service. That's humility.
Often, like, I can't speak for myself. Often,
you can or can't?
I can, I guess.
You better, because no one else will.
So, like, I often lose sight of it, like, this urgency of the situation in which I am, that, you know, there's so much despise for, actually, as Krishna was so unlimitedly great, and then I just chant around without really knowing what I'm doing it for, I guess.
Why you're here? You forget why you're here, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, well, like, I know I came from the Gurkhas and the Sandesh.
Are you getting enough?
Yeah.
When you first join, everyone gives you the burfi and the sandesh, and then after a few weeks they say, Prabhu, you're eating too many sweets, we're not going to give you any more.
Yeah, I guess it's not that, you know, that I'm forgetting why I'm here,
but it's hearing. This is the point.
Yeah.
If we don't hear, we will forget. We'll forget the purpose of what it is that we're doing. We will forget, and we'll drift, and we won't feel satisfied, and we won't know why. If we don't hear Shastra, we will drift in here from here in the association of devotees.
I guess when you come to the point that you really are aware of Krishna's mercy and what's awaiting you, and you feel the disability to do it yourself, then you probably would chant all your own complete repentance, is that right?
Okay, say that again. If you're...
What you were saying the other day in the lecture, if you would understand, first of all, that you don't, that you know that yourself as the ability, but you know that Krishna is so great and that he can give you, that he, you know, that he can help you to come to that level, and if you're aware of the urgency to do that, then we'll chant your rounds and completely focused all the time.
Focused in dependence. That's the third verse of Sukhasthakam. Trinada Bhisanitsena Taroda Pisihisna Manina Manadena Kirtani Asadhari. That's, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that that platform is the platform of Nishta, fixedness. And then based on that, the next level is Ruchi. And then, Nadanam. Having a taste. Yeah, it goes up. Yeah, if we actually are convinced and fixed and dependent on Krishna, then, and I think it's, yeah, then the next one is Ruchi. Yeah. Yes. We will naturally be attentive. I mean, maybe not every single moment, but we'll be attentive because we want something. We need something. And it's alive within us. Our relationship, that desire to serve Krishna with devotion is alive within us. And that cleanses the heart when we chant in that mood. I see that all the time. When there's such a difference between the different ways I can chant and different qualities of my chanting, the effect on my consciousness is so different. So we want to hear, and we want to apply what we hear to our chanting, to our devotion, to our dealings with each other. For service. Yeah. Is that alright? Yes, last question though, because it's getting late.
the energy then to say a few words about Goswami disappearing.
About Gopabhatta? Wasn't that yesterday? But I didn't say anything yesterday either.
Reading about you,
how you evaded the army with the jati.
I thought it was
so peculiar. So I evaded the army but joined another army. I didn't expect that. But that was a fun, it was a true story. It was actually quite amazing. That was Krishna's Prabhupada's. So Krishna will save you from the drift point. That's the irony. We're so much trying to avoid. Funny. Thank you. But one thing about, since you asked about Gopal Bhatta Goswami, I'll just say a few things. That he's most famous for what? For what? Sri Radha Raman, the deity. He had a Shalagram Shila. And he was worshipping a Shalagram Shila. And someone gave him some clothing for the deities. And he didn't have a deity that you could dress. And he had so much devotion that Shalagram Shila, which I can't, it was a, maybe Krishna Gajra Prabhu knows which one it was, because there's different names. He, in the next day, manifested himself as a deity, so replete and so complete that it has fingerprints. And so how much devotion did Gopal Bhatta Goswami have? Mahaprabhu met him when he was a young boy, Gopal Bhatta was a young boy, when Mahaprabhu traveled in the 4, 5, or 6 years that after he took sannyas, he traveled in South India, and during the Chaturmasi he stayed at Sri Rangam, a very holy place, and he stayed in the house of Gopal Bhatta's father, and he had two brothers. Venkata Bhatta was his name, and also he had another brother named Gopal Guru, who later became Prabodhananda Saraswati, who wrote the most amazing books. But he's so incredibly fixed on Vrajadham, and he wrote Sri Vrindavan Mahima Amrita, and Madhava something, Sangeet, and very advanced, not beginner books, and Rasa Niti. So he was the guru, the teacher and the guru of Gopal Bhatta, who was young. And then at one point Mahaprabhu sent Gopal, he told him to stay, I believe, until his parents, who were Vaishnavas, stay in Sri Rangam while they were on this planet and serve them, as he did with Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, I believe so. And then Gopal Bhatta went to Vrindavan, and Mahaprabhu arranged that Rupin Sanatan would take care of him and treat him as, give him full shelter. So that was Mahaprabhu's direct order in a letter, that Rupin Sanatan take care of young Gopal Bhatta. And the dealings between the Goswamis were so sweet, and Sanatana Goswami wrote a book called Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is specifically on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He told him to write a book about Vaishnava Sadhacha, the activities of the devotees, how to act, the proper activities of a devotee, how they should act. And Sanatana Goswami wrote and gave it to Gopal Bhatta to edit, and he gave full credit to the book to Gopal Bhatta. And Gopal Bhatta wrote an outline of a book of the entirety of the Gaudiya Siddhanta philosophy, the Sandarbhas, and he gave it to Jiva Goswami to edit, and Jiva Goswami became the author. He filled it out and changed the order. So Gopal Bhatta was such an exalted devotee, an eternal resident of associate of Krishna, and he performed his. He has a bhajan kutir in a very wonderful place, just in between Nandagram and Barsana, and it is called Sanket. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Sanket. Yeah, and that's where Gopal Bhatta's bhajan kutir is. Raise your hand if you've seen, offered your obeisances at Gopal Bhatta's bhajan kutir. Very fortunate, very holy place, wonderful place. It was a meeting place. Sanket was a meeting place of Radha and Krishna. It's a village, and inside there is one of the, in the village there's some, a few temples, not very many, but one is of Sanket Devi and Yogamaya. There's a Yogamaya temple there. And I think that's all I could say. That's all I remember. Anyone else have anything to say about Gopal Bhatta Goswami? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Vallabha Gaur Nithai, Jagannath Prabhu Devi ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavinoda ki jai.